data is primarily data. If you are able to take care of your data, then you need to recover well enough. So we look at what is available in storage primarily. Then we move the data to a couple of popular options for other products. Then we look at what applications you have. Precious generally, if you got your data, then it's about ensuring the load in the application is vectored to one of several points and load balancing and so on. My voice is low. All right. Is my voice loud enough now? Okay. Then we will look at what is DR in a hybrid scenario. We plan to take about 20 minutes to give you the basics here, or look at the options, and then we will invite you.
Do you have second mic there?
If you have hand, yeah, nice.
You can take this. That's okay.
Okay, so let's move on to the types of disaster recovery. So among the various types that you see, you can generally classify these into these various types or let's say various kinds. So these classifications, I mean, probably a few more, these are the most common ones that I have noticed in looking at disaster recovery. So before you implement a strategy, it is generally good to understand what is the pressure on your DR, what is the scope of your DR, what is the nature of your DR, and so on. So in terms of scope, people do disaster recovery both locally within one particular installation as well as across a geo. So in the first case, it's called a local disaster recovery. In the second case, it's called a geo disaster. Geo disaster recovery typically puts distance between data centers. And people use thumb rules like 200 miles and so on. Sometimes people look at continental disasters and ensure that you have different installations in at least two different continents. If it is local, it's more about avoiding single points of failure so that you are able to recover from single points of failure like a particular machine crash or maybe a disk went corrupt or maybe one service became unavailable and so on. In terms of speed, there are usually three classifications. A cold DR is one where the data is available in a second place, data center or local or geo otherwise. And then it's about getting that recovered and setting up the infrastructure once there is a disaster. So the infrastructure is not available to start with, the applications are not running there, but the data is available. Maybe the data also is a little old, a little stale. But the idea is basically you don't want to put in a lot of money into building a live running disaster recovery site. You use the data and then you recover. You basically build out the rest of the application just in time. Such people also plan for the compute and storage needed, but then put them into a cold state and then wake them up when there's a disaster. It's cold. In warm, what usually happens is that data is replicated at a greater frequency. Usually reaches a disaster recovery site earlier. It is possible that either the data tier or the compute tier, either the services or the data are running, but maybe not both. And then whatever is not running becomes available. Sometimes the sites on which warm DR are there allow you to switch very fast to them, but you still want to reduce the cost and not make it functional for actual transactions to go there. Warm DR sites are almost never right. Then there is hot DR, where the disaster recovery site is synchronized at a very good frequency, permitting you to do a very low latency cutover. And this basically gives you an RPO to RTO trade-off, RPO-RTO, let's say, switch or slider that you can move in these types of topologies. Then in terms of consistency, you may want only fully consistent data, but not maybe up to the minute or up to the second latency. Sometimes you are okay with leaving consistency but doing better on latency, right? So availability, consistency, partitionability, these are all competing considerations, much like the Heisenberg's uncertainty principle. And there's a theorem called CAP theorem, if you're not heard about it. It's good to study, which says that you can't do well on all of consistency, availability, and partitionability at the same time. So sometimes you trade off consistency, let's say transactional or asset consistency, for eventual consistency. But that basically helps you be more available because you can replicate data which is not essentially at the end of transaction boundaries. Products relying on relational database tend to look for transactional or asset consistency products which are not relational based, which are maybe NoSQL based, are okay with eventual consistency. Products which are replication based are okay with eventual consistency. Means secondary will become consistent with primary at some point in time, but not always. The secondary may be readable, may not be readable, and maybe it will be writable. Writable secondaries in DR topologies are extremely rare. They are more common in HA topology. A DR by definition is for disaster. So, secondary is almost always not writable. If it is writable, it's probably not a DR, because any write that happens in the secondary also has to come back to the primary. So you have a different kind of pressure there. So therefore, usually disaster recovery sites are almost invariably readable, are non-writable. Some of them are readable, permitting you to keep the DR node available for some time while you decide whether you want to recover the primary, or you want to wait longer, or you want to just cut over. So having a readable DR usually is costlier, but it gives you an option to keep something running, certain part of your workload running, but not all the workload. Then you can also have a non-readable, which is basically a passive secondary. You can't run any queries, you can't run any kind of workload. And then, depending on what is the level of redundancy you are, how paranoid you are about DR, you might have a single cloud DR, a single cloud provider, no on-premises component is doing DR. You might have a DR which is multi-cloud. There are people who do DR topologies which is partly Azure, partly AWS as well. But what is more common is partly Azure, partly on-premises, or partly AWS, partly on-premises, partly cloud, partly on-premises is, so when I say on-premises, private cloud. Let's say you have a private cloud infrastructure where you can also do certain amount of automated provisioning and few characteristics of public cloud. Then you might have a topology which is partly in cloud, and then you have a disaster recovery on-premises. What is also very popular is you have your private cloud as your primary center, and then public cloud as your disaster recovery center also, whichever is possible. Then there is the notion of failover. When you failover from one part to the other part in a DR topology, you may be able to failover automatically. Automatic failover also calls for automatic detection. Now, as we work through these technologies, not all of this are going to be possible for all of those technologies. So we'll see what is possible with what and so on. But automatic failover in DR is usually rare. It's very much more common in HA. HA is by definition automatic failover. But DR is not like that. Usually the failover is a conscious decision. But sometimes if your DR topology is readable, then failover from active primary to a readable secondary is to some extent automated. And then it could be semi-automatic where maybe you fail over the DR, but the cutoff from read to write is manual. So finally, you can also have a fully automated failover. Alright, so let's look at what are the features that are of interest in Azure in DR, independent of the specifics of things like database and so on. First of all, in Azure, there are multiple geo-regions. Even in Asia, we have Southeast Asia paired with East Asia, with Hong Kong and Singapore. You have Australia, you have Japan. All of these are having running geo data centers, and you might have heard during keynote that India is going to get one soon. Similarly, Europe, similarly North America, multiple data centers there. US Central, US North, US East and West, actually more than one data center in the US East. Then we have Brazil too. So different Azure, different regions which enable you to first of all, choose something that is as close to you as possible to reduce latency, and also look at paired regions as well as multiple regions for disaster recovery. The other notion of fault domains in Azure, which are basically within a particular data center, the ability to basically ensure that your virtual machines or pass roles are spread across different racks, so that things like cabling or power or any hardware failure is local to one of two nodes in a fault domain. So if you use a version of an availability set in Azure and you're dealing with infrastructure as a service, then fault domains are automatically chosen for you. You get into fault domain 0 or fault domain 1. And if you're within an availability set, then what also happens is that your hardware failure, power failure, rack failure is limited to one node. there's also storage replication. We maintain 3 local copies by default, local LRS. You can also do 2 other things now in Azure called ZRS and GRS. In GRS, data is replicated to two paired Azure regions. Whatever you put in blob storage in Azure gets replicated to 3 more copies in a paired geo region. With ZRS, you can have a copy in one zone, though not geo-separated. So you can choose between LRS, GRS, and ZRS for maintaining up to 6 copies of your data. Apart from that, you can also have a readable GRS, which means what you replicate using GRS, that can optionally be enabled for read, and you can start reading what blob storage replicates. Then there is Express Route, which can provide connectivity in hybrid DR scenarios for fast failover. And you have 2 types of Express Route connections that become available, network provider and exchange provider. So we won't go into that. It also makes its entry in a lot of DR scenarios. It's basically a networking option for fast connectivity in data centers. In terms of other technologies, there are some related technologies, but we go on to the application of database, and that will take you to a few of them.
Hello, who's working?
Yeah, so DR, as far as Azure is concerned, there are multiple areas where DR is required. As we are talking through a lot of other DRs, I'll just cover the SQL portion of it. Those who have attended the morning session, they would have got the hang of that and with demonstration there. I'll just do talking over here, and any questions related to that, we can take it up for sure. So we do have automatic backup that is supported now. So your database with various service tiers, the retention period is different, but the backups are automatically happening, and you can actually restore to the point in time whatever you choose. You can just choose a slider and you can actually restore back based on these automatic backups. Those are happening. This is system driven. You can obviously have your own scheduled manual backups as well, and you can retain to whatever storage location you intend to do that. So for example, beyond retention period, you want to maintain your own backup copies, you have to have your own backup solution for that. In the sense, you continue taking backup wherein a requirement comes in, you need to go back for 1 year back data, so you need to be able to pull that data across. Otherwise, out of box, what automatic backup supports is retention period of around 7, 15, and 35 days. 15, I guess, second standard 15, right? 7, 15, and 35 days. So that's a retention period. Standard geo replication, so you have like the replication happening across the region, and that is continuously happening. So you have within the region a copy and across the region a copy as well. With active geo replication, that's a flavor of that where you can have multiple secondaries, and you can choose multiple replication regions there so that you have multiple copies just in case you're worried about two region failures, you have third region to fall back on. Point in time restore, I just mentioned, you can choose within the retention period you want to go back to certain time. You can very well go with the UI driven or APIs, whatever you choose, and you can go back in time there. So, any questions? Happy to take, otherwise.
Yeah, alright, let's start the question. So the backup which happens to a particular server, so does the Azure chooses the region automatically based on the which one is the nearest to minimize the downtime, or manually
Azure SQL database?
Azure SQL or the cloud service?
SQL specific geo replication, it will be a paired region where it will continue taking. In the active, you have a choice where you want to replicate. For others, you may want to answer.
Yeah, so in general, it depends on what you're talking about. So if you're specifically talking about Azure SQL DB, if you're doing standard geo replication, it is paired region. If if you are doing active Azure application, you can choose any 4 different other Azure regions and decide to replicate.
What is the downtime?
RPO of 1 hour. I don't know if it's going to be downtime. So basically the time to recover, the max time we take is 1 hour. But in the morning I did a demo where I could restore the database backup in like 1 minute. So it will typically depend on some other things like what is the total size of your database, how far back in time you want to move. So what's the technology behind? We take a backup every day. Full backup every week. We take a differential backup every day, and we take a log backup every 5 minutes. So depending on what point you have to go, you have to first restore one full backup, then restore a couple of, or maybe 3 or 4 differential backups, then move those 5 minute log backups. This happens very fast in Azure, but still we say within 1 hour we'll be able to recover.
So what is this, SQL application or SQL in VM application?
What's your question actually?
Geo
replication, alright, yeah. So Geo replication is applicable only to this slide, the previous slide, which is Azure SQL Service alone, not for virtual machines. For virtual machines, Mandar, just want to talk about what you do for that.
Two questions. When we go for GRS, the failover is automatic, Azure will do for us, or do we have to do anything manually?
Yeah, so there are different kinds of failures. Whenever we write, even in LRS, in fact, your question is as much valid for LRS as LRS. So, this is discussed in detail in a research paper where we talk about how we do what is called a storage stamps in Azure. So when we write any data in Azure, we will synchronously write to one more copy, and then we will asynchronously write to a third copy. When we have a quorum on the commit, we will return the write back and say the write is completed. That is fundamental. Now, when corruptions happen, Azure will automatically detect corruptions that happen and it will heal those corruptions. This is as far as what Azure does by itself. Now, when you want a custom disaster recovery strategy, if you are not relying on a service like Azure SQL DB, which is relying on blob storage, that is good for that automatic DR which will be done, but that can't be used to implement an application level disaster recovery where you have to find out what data you want out of what is there in your blob storage at which point of time and so on. So you have to do more than that to make use of that for an application DR. The second thing is the blob storage copies that are there in Azure, those 6 copies are primarily for internal DR by the Azure infrastructure. If you use GRS, then you can use GRS RA mode to implement your own disaster recovery strategy. So once you do GRS and enable it for read access, you can start reading that and then do it. Yeah, but at any point of time, you can also take what is called as blob snapshots, and we'll cover some of those ideas. Yes?
One data center,
LRS, multiple data centers within the same, within a close geo proximity ZRS zone, within across 2 geo separated data centers, it is GRS. Question was, is LRS specific to one data center? Answer is yes. Okay, we'll cover a little more and then we'll again come back to questions. Okay, moving on to VMs.
So, as far as SQL is concerned, when we come on to the IaaS model where SQL Server is hosted in a VM on Azure, your traditional on-prem DR strategies work over here. So, you have always on availability groups as an option, shipping the traditional 2000 way onwards what we have been doing, that is available as well. Because ultimately what you're doing with IaaS model is just SQL Server which is on-prem in a VM which is virtualized. Instead of hosting that in your data center, you're hosting it somewhere else. So more or less DR, yeah.
I heard about
As is, SQL Server just put in a VM is not going to help you from the traditional SQL DR strategies. I mean, what maximum can happen that VM is available for you no matter what, Azure is taking care of that. But as far as log shipping and stuff, unless you configure, you're not going to get that.
You don't get it. What might have been told to you is that if your disaster recovery is as simple as shut down the VM, take a copy of the disk and, you know, get it back whenever you want, that kind of disaster recovery is okay even for a SQL VM. But many times that's not enough for an actual relational database.
So, the scenario was for on-premise using the Hyper-V replica, we wanted it to replicate the DRS.
So, that's very reasonable, except that that is at the whole SQL Server level rather than at one database.
Or rather, yeah, complete Windows Server itself. Complete Windows Server. So, that particular snapshot you're getting through the VM backup, and you can restore it anytime. With that SQL Server data is also available with you. So I mean, the question or the context needs to be understood there. It is more of a DR with that kind of a strategy also works, but what does it does not mean that just because you are in a VM, you are automatically having all these are SQL specific. Unless you configure, you are not going to get that. But that is one of the DR strategies, what in other terms I can mention.
Yeah, so you can do a VM disaster recovery. So a couple of things you have to be careful about when you are using a VM level disaster recovery for SQL databases. A VM is not transactionally consistent. It is very different for Hyper-V replica, that is different. But in general, when a VM is just running with a database, if you do a replication of the disk, that replication is not replicating at the transaction boundary. So one transaction in SQL Server may have, let's say, 100 different writes. So, a disk replication technology will replicate writes, it will not replicate transactions. So, what can happen if you do that is, when you try to restore a database on which these writes have been replicated, it can go to suspect mode because it's not hit a transaction boundary and it may even not hit a page boundary, it's all possible. Now, having said that, if your VM is quiet, if you have shut down the VM, this is okay. And then there are some technologies in Microsoft which actually do what is called as volume shadow copy. That we understand the notion of a logical transaction. So, it depends on what technology you are using, and those technologies do take a VM level consistent backup, and you are still okay with that. Yeah.
Move on. Yeah. So, you have log shipping option as well. You may want to, that's a traditional old and best way as far as long as you are okay with the delay that you are having, like 15 minutes if at all you are okay to lose the data and have a second copy somewhere, that is also fine. Mirroring the old way, I mean 2012 onwards, we do suggest that always on is the option, and that's where all the features will keep on coming. So mirroring is kind of a deprecated feature, but if at all you have a VM and always on is not fitting, or maybe you are having SQL 2008 as the VM which is hosted in cloud, you don't have a choice than to go for database mirroring there to have HDR strategy of your own on SQL 2008 based database. Of course, nothing will stop you taking with the traditional backups and restores. Those are irrespective of whatever DR strategy you are having with whatever options. The backups are the must, which are the most trusted ones, and you require them. So you can continue doing your own sequence of full differential and log backups. In fact, Azure Database on its own does once a week full backup, daily differential backup, and every 5 minutes transaction log backup. So it is actually doing that in the past version of it. The similar strategy what you are right now having on-prem, that can be continued as well there.
Yeah, a couple of technologies which power these things. For example, an always-on availability group in Azure can be stretched now across two data centers. The VNet in Azure has now become a regional VNet. So you can have your always-on configuration itself stretching across two data centers. So you can have your readable replicas or async replicas in a second data center. To do that, you need to have a regional VNet. We also have cross VNet connectivity. One VNet can be bridged with another VNet, which means you can also stretch an Active Directory domain across two Azure data centers as well, which is pretty useful. Sometimes even within one data center, if you are having two different VNets, then you can have a domain relationship by doing cross VNet connectivity. Now the always on in Azure can run behind an internal load balancer. Previously it used to run on ALB or the Azure load balancer. It can now run behind an internal load balancer as well, which is a little more secure. Specifically in 2014, we brought in a feature where the secondary becomes readable even if there's a loss of quorum. So let's say you lost your primary data, and then you had a replica in your secondary data center. then a lot of people wanted to be able to read the replica when the primary is lost, and that feature has come into 2014. So if you have a choice and you can use 2014, then your always on replica also becomes readable, which means you can send some of your read workload over there. Then there are some nice third-party solutions. Once again, there are some nice third-party solutions also, which can do certain kinds of bridging. For example, Barracuda gives options to bridge VNets in a different way, and so on. So you can combine these with different other subjects.
So for this VNets and enabling VR, could you do the site-to-site as well as the express line, which is a mandatory option?
So express route is not mandatory. You need for cross VNet connectivity, the technology is very similar to a site-to-site VPN. So typically you talk about site-to-site VPN when you're connecting your on-premises infrastructure to Azure. But basically it's the same idea when you connect two different Azure VNets together. So in order to bridge the VNets, you do something very similar to a tunnel between two Azure sites. Now if you want to improve the quality of that and get something like dedicated bandwidth, or you want to get a dedicated circuit like a black fiber, then you tie up with one of these network providers or exchange providers to get, you know, very high bandwidth connection. That is express route, it's not mandatory.
Just to answer, is express route coming
to India? I can't talk about features that are not released, but in general, what is, we are also defining what is generally core service tiers in any data center. So I don't expect Indian data center to be any different from any other data centers. So what are those core rings of services? We expect all of them, including express route, to come. But what will typically happen in Indian data centers, there will be a preview period where these services become available for experimentation. So that's when you'll get a very good feel of how these things are. But during GA, I expect that it's going to be just like anything else. Yeah.
Couple of good questions.
So if you ask on India data center, you're going to give up this. Right?
Last one was missing for you.
Okay. Does Azure determine full backup, differential backup automatically? Yes. Yeah, so again, Azure is now such a vast thing that I don't know what I'm talking about when you say Azure is intelligent. So if you're talking about Azure SQL DB, yes, so it already predetermines all this for you. If you're talking about Azure on VMs, it does none of any of this. So you have to determine everything yourself. But that's basically the IaaS versus PaaS model, isn't it? So in the IaaS model, you do everything yourself, except that you don't deal with hardware. In the PaaS model, lots of things are automatically done. All the regions? I'm sorry, all the regions, all the editions or what? What are yours? No. So things like pairing are fundamental, very, very, very fundamental. So even when, let's say, Indian data center comes up, there will be paired region and so on. So things like pairing, how blob storage work and all that are just too fundamental for them to be any difference. There are some services which might be where there's a lot of uptake in one particular region and not so much in any other region because the business there doesn't justify. Only those start getting, you know, customized. But yeah, things like pairing are like very fundamental.
Alright,
that's also
possible.
With this backup technology, is this good enough for a complete DR solution, or do you still have to significantly depend on third-party backup solution?
Okay, are we talking about this slide or the previous slide?
This one? For this complete slide.
This complete slide?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, so I am having production customers, many numbers of them, who are just surviving on the first and fourth. If they do both of this, they are generally having, with no third party need, they have a full solution. And I'm having big production websites, very, very visible production websites which are using this. Oh, I believe, yeah, we can talk about it. So, we're going to have some people from Infosys.com are going to come and talk. I've been part of the solution built over there. And they're basically using some of these technologies. No third party. It's fully, the whole thing is fully running on these technologies. So yeah, I see a lot of third party technologies being used deeper when you mix these topologies with open source solutions. Then I see lots. For example, if MySQL comes in, I typically also see ClearDB as somebody who provides managed services on top of MySQL. Usually on the Microsoft technology spectrum, it's much less of the level. Alright, next slide.
Yeah, next slide.
Alright, very quickly, you can also talk about disaster recovery for different products. For example, if you put Windows 2012 on VMs, then things like BPM, doing Azure site recovery and so on start becoming relevant, where you can go from on-premises to Azure and back with technologies like slide site recovery. There's things like InMage and some of those acquisitions. But also basic, OS is still there for you. So you can, whatever you can do with the OS is still very much available. So things like volume shadow copy and, BPM, OS backup, system state backup. Some of the things that you can enable and disable with Active Directory, those things are very much in play. With SharePoint, disaster recovery is to a large extent focused on SQL. So SharePoint sites, in my understanding and in my experience, are heavily focused on SQL DR. If they get SQL DR, then SharePoint DR happens. But then, what they also do is to have secondary sites also configured with the servers. And there are two tricks people use. One is they typically provision similar capacity or little less capacity in the DR's data center in terms of compute. So if I have four application servers and then, let's say four web servers in SharePoint, I typically have three or two or sometimes four. So slightly deprovision your DR, but sometimes they also equally provisioned. And in some of those cases, what people also do is to shut down those virtual machines so that you don't pay for the compute. Sometimes people keep it on so that the DR is fast. So both of these are adopted. But SharePoint DR is very well documented, SharePoint DR on Azure, what you can do and how you're supposed to do it. So there's a lot of documentation on achieving DR for SharePoint as well. On Active Directory, pretty much same principles as on-premises. For MySQL, master-slave is very common for local disaster recovery. But I'm also seeing multi-master topologies with MySQL. Less of DR, more of HA kind of option. And then, like I said, ClearDB is one very common combination with MySQL, because then a few things that you want to do often in MySQL get managed by ClearDB and services like that. For BizTalk, DR is, since BizTalk doesn't work with always on availability groups yet, BizTalk DR is mostly about using log shipping plus full backups on SQL. And of course, differential backups. That's how this talk DR usually works. Now, when you talk about these products, things like SharePoint and so on, you can start using the service called Traffic Manager. In Traffic Manager, you can configure multiple endpoints which are getting monitored by Traffic Manager. So when traffic comes to your website, Traffic Manager can sense that one of your sites is down and redirect traffic to the other site. This is basically what is called as failover mode. Traffic Manager also has a performance mode by which it can find out where your traffic is originating and redirect the user to the nearest data center. Not important for disaster recovery. For disaster recovery, there are three modes in Traffic Manager. One that is important to us is failover mode, where it can sense which is available. And then Traffic Manager is an Azure service. There are also others. I mean, Akamai and websites, a very popular combination. So you can use other Traffic Manager like constructions and products in combination for DR strategy. So Akamai monitoring endpoints and then redirecting users to a DR site is a very, very common construction in cloud on Azure. If you're an Oracle database, then local DR is usually achieved by technologies like Active Data Guard, Data Guard, Active Data Guard, there are a few variations, Golden Gate and so on. Not RAC though. So the RAC requires shared database. Most cloud providers don't have shared database, right? So for the same reason, SQL cluster is not an option for disaster recovery. So it's more of technologies that replicate data rather than a shared disk. And therefore, things like Data Guard and Golden Gate are more popular with Oracle.
Yes.
Yes.
Sure.
Actually, this is our last slide, so let's finish it off and then we can just do questions. This is our last slide, and after we can do all questions. Yeah. Okay. So for applications, as I said, pressure on DR to a large extent is data. So for application databases, we already talked about that. All of those options previously apply. For application code and deployments, it's usually multiple deployments on multiple data centers with some synchronization. Some people use file level replication technology, replicate deployment, but not so common. Because people don't do like 10 data centers, they typically do 2 at the most, and you know, very rarely 3. Usually deployments are repeated on multiple data centers, and then they are kept in shutdown state like I mentioned, or sometimes they are in running state. Sometimes people combine this with auto scale, by which you can find out the usage on your site and on that basis get more compute in place just in time. That also sometimes happens. For application endpoints, so for application you look at, you decompose a problem, okay, there's a database, there's data of various kinds. If it is eventually consistent data, then use storage application. If it is transactionally consistent data, use, you know, the technology we talked about on VMs. If it is using a service like Azure, SQL DB, use whatever the service provides for DR, then you're done with the data. On compute, if you're a service, then you don't do DR. For example, if you're using Event Hub in Azure, you don't do DR for that. You do DR for your own application because it's a service, and for O365, you don't do DR. These are done by those services themselves. So for your own applications, you typically deploy it in multiple places, and primarily deployment is not a pressure because your deployment is not changing at the rate at which your data is changing. And so multiple deployments are usually okay. And then if it is files that are changing, file level replication, things like RAGRS apply. And if it is about endpoints, then services like Traffic Manager apply. So when you're talking application here, all these technologies come into place. You need endpoint level vectoring, you need file level replication, you need database level disaster recovery, and then you know things like internal load balancer, regional VNets, all of these things come into play to do application level DR. We talked about redirection with Traffic Manager. CDN is very popular in DR scenarios, though it is intended to be a performance option by caching. When you have a CDN in place, what happens is that a lot of queries get served out of CDN. CDN basically caches static content and so on, readable content. If you look at a lot of sites that are public facing, a lot of that content is read. Usually the read to write ratio is heavily skewed in terms of read. So CDN comes to the rescue a lot of times in disaster scenarios because content gets served out of CDN. So putting a CDN helps, and CDN services have local nodes in various regions, so it's also a good latency option. If you are building applications on Azure, we have a new service called Application Insights. You can start publishing information about your applications into Application Insights. And then you can do things like dashboarding specific to your application, so that you can see how many requests are coming, how many, what's happening, is something going on specific to your application. In Azure, there is a service dashboard where you can find out current health of the service, whether it is down, up, performance issues, and so on. If you want to do something like that for your application, then you can look at Application Insights. And then sometimes in DR scenarios, you want to recovery, and then you want to find out root cause. Something that helps there are things like database auditing. We also have a service called Operation Logs. So when you do a create delete operation on your portal, or an update operation, these actions are logged into Azure Operation Logs. Then you can download that and then you can see what happened at what point of time. As you know, a lot of DR sometimes is caused by an operator doing something wrong or inadvertently. And you can do a reasonable amount of investigation with that. So mostly there are some practices, but yeah, you have a question.
So very much related to what we are discussing, it's more of a scenario in sense of chalk talk, sure, what's the best way of doing this. It's a kind of a more read operations, and the data can be relational, as well as there's few part of the data like resumes, which are like documents. And the goal is to not only achieve DR, but have by failover, but also have a kind of a load sharing as well, and the near low latency geo services as well. Something like what Google will do. Either you can show demos or on the board, what technologies and how do they and how to optimize it. Where does the CDN come into picture? Where CDN can help? Where it cannot help?
have a marker. You have a marker.
Then there is block to block replication.
between two DCs and then periodic restore from the block on the secondary DC. This is also common passive.
But we have this I'm talking about read only and accessing from the web. Okay. So put a scenario behind it. US side and India side or Singapore side. The Singapore side goes for read only purpose to Singapore data centers, replicated copy. And US one goes to the US replicated copy. How is that done? Is it using traffic manager or one of these top only?
Yeah, you basically do it with traffic. So in traffic manager, you mark your policy which says users of this particular types will go.
So you can do a region based routing.
It is region based. It is actually based on the source IP.
So that's all high level APIs.
No, you don't even need to do configuration.
I mean, yeah, the configuration.
So in your case, you need a disaster for US as well as a disaster for Singapore. So what you might actually do is have a Singapore and Hong Kong data center with replication between them. Maybe US East and US West with another replication center between them. So that we have local DR for each. Because the data is separate, there is no geo between, let's say, Asia.
Yeah, so one is geo, a single database, but replicated all over places, and then they all, something like CDN.
Yeah, that's a hub and spoke.
US latency.
That is hub and spoke, very much possible. So yeah, if you have, let's say, US as a central point,
yes.
That is basically topology, like let's say, US is a central point, and from US, you want to replicate different, other centers, that's a different topology. So let's say I have US as central, then you bring individual VNX. You can have what is called as a multi-site VPN in Azure. You stretch it to, let's say, Southeast Asia, you stretch it to Australia, and so on and so forth. Replication happens from each at this layer. But that is at the layer. And the web is different. So different technologies are placed in here. So you have web US, there's an endpoint here. You just go there. And then, you have Singapore. Different technology, web. So these are managed in segment with traffic manager. So when a request from any of them hits here, whether it goes to US or Singapore is managed at this level, not at this level.
But still, how would the Singapore website will make sure that it connects to the Singapore database?
That is that's a consequence of the VNet. So what you will do inside, so inside the Singapore website, inside the Singapore installation, you have one VNet. So let's say it's the VNet Singapore, and then I have a VNet, which is VNet. US. So VNet US will have the web of US, database of US, app of US. VNet of Singapore will have the web layer, app layer, and database layer of Singapore. And so when it hits this, this will just be an internal routing within the same VNet to the database. So your performance is
different. VNet will do this. Will
you one VNet.
One more traffic manager there. No. That's not required.
But you may need an internal load balancer. Because in each tier, there can be multiple servers. And so you may want to load balance that.
Yes,
for that
yes, 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 yes.
Oh, good question. Let's have a hand over.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Let me ask about the Oracle database. Regarding Oracle, I think Microsoft was the first to launch a full-fledged Oracle mix unlike AWS. So Oracle has certain licensing constraints, unlike Microsoft SQL. Oracle DC and DR both are actually charged or licensed separately. Also, Oracle has other constraints like the DR can be switched on only 10 days a year. So, how could you manage that? Or how would you ensure that this is compliant?
Well, like I said, right, in Oracle, you are on virtual machines. So, we don't get into what happens inside the virtual machines. You also often database is a service from Microsoft. It's not based on Oracle.
Just
it's from SQL. So for Oracle, pretty much on the same path as you were if you were on Oracle services. So you are. That's a different model altogether. We do not offer Oracle as a service on
Oracle. It's still part of the VM.
Quick question. One question at a time. If you have one problem.
I'll answer
the question. So, his question is there a concept of static IPs, Nasho? Yes, very much. Yes. You can have stable IPs. You can have stable instance level IPs as well as IPs at load balance at the cloud service level IPs. So, two kinds of static IPs. There's a third one. There's also an internal static IP. So, for the internal, inside the VNet, you can have a static IP.
In the morning session, you were talking about auditing being introduced in SQL also. Can you
you just expand on what is available in terms of?
Yeah, actually, we can even show you. So just step out of the room at the end of this. We can show you how what is done. It's somewhat similar to what happens in the on-premises product. So various actions that happen on the Azure SQL database get automatically audited. And then you can go and see. We can show you how to see that in the portal, and then we can.
You can actually see the DML operations happening on the table, the selects those are happening on the table. All that gets audited. Okay. The way that feature is there on-prem.
Can that information, the audit information, be extracted and made part of the application?
Yeah.
Yes.
The information is available to you.
You can query that.
But because application is yours,
yes.
Extract and integrate with the application is your responsibility.
Yes, that's absolutely okay. But it's available to
the information is available and it is programmatically accessible as
well.
Okay. But one thing I know.
On this side, please. So we have.
Yeah, one question over here.
We do HA and DR between the two.
Now the distinction is very, very small. Yes, I'm saying now the distinction is very small.
Yeah, with the latest one?
Yeah, no, sorry. So the engine, V12 engine, is like 95% plus compatible with the on-premise version. The big feature which is still missing is what we call as transparent data encryption, by which data gets automatically encrypted. So now we have something else called row-level security and so on.
There is a data masking as well, dynamic data masking,
with a mask,
especially with credit card numbers and all that.
At least can we export that data
and I mean, you can't interchange on-prem and Azure database.
Okay, if you want to do, so there's a session called migration. So what you have is, you have an Azure SQL migration assistant. So if you run the migration assistant, SSMA, on your on-premise,
can
tell you what is compatible with Azure SQL DB and what is not compatible. If you have something that is not compatible, you cannot migrate. But with what is there now in V12, a lot of it will be compatible. And having looked at the report,
yeah, it is not one-to-one at this point. Yeah, but as Ranga mentioned, 95% of the features are now available.
The answer is that it is not going to be backup and restore. It is going to be backpack and restore, which is an export
and import. Yeah.
Okay, now this is
talk about operation logs.
Yeah.
And what about if we have a DBL kind of operations?
So that is different, right? So that is more like database audit type of feature.
So we can't do it when we do it with DR.
Okay, so what do you want to do with the DBL?
Let's suppose somebody has changed our restore procedure, some query inside the restore procedure.
So that is an audit. You find those things by audit, not by operation log. So operation log is related to provisioning of services. Suppose they create a new virtual machine, suppose they delete a virtual machine. At that level, you can find out with operation log. When you get into the service, into Azure SQL DB or into the virtual machine, what you do, use the audit feature in that particular service. And then you can find out whatever you want.
That is inside the VM.
Inside the VM. In your case, inside the service.
Okay.
In the example that you described, it will be inside the Azure SQL database audit service. If it was Azure SQL DB, it will be inside the Azure SQL DB, SQL Server product. Are we done? Okay, great. Again, like I told you, we want to wait a little outside. So, can we take one last question?
Plan cache won't migrate.
We are talking only about data, so we'll have to set up the plan cache has to be read, the queries have to be put to run again.
It's about storage levels. If
thank you all of you.